Welcome back to Yang Daily. I'll be your host, Alex Cheney, bringing you all the Yang news you need to live your life right. All right, so we've got a lot to talk about today, and it's not so good. By which I really mean it's freaking awful. The reason this episode is late is because I had to do a good bit of research into one of these issues to be certain it's real. That's how bad it was. Anyway, let's pull the Band-Aid off. The first blow is that Amy McGrath has won the Kentucky primary. And it's hard to grasp just how devastating that news is, all the more considering that Booker came within 1% of winning. We will, of course, have to support McGrath now, but this almost certainly means 6 more years of Mitch McConnell. If that is true, then the only chance we have for barring McConnell from killing all legislative progress for those 6 years is to flip the Senate so that he's no longer the majority leader. That means we need to win Senate seats really badly, or we can kiss any dreams of America recovering from this pandemic and coming back stronger goodbye. I guess I should also mention that Mike's campaign released internal polling data that they had slightly more voters whose initial choice had been McGrath than whose initial choice had been Booker, and they're using that data to say that Mike dropping out would have only made things worse. I don't want to get bogged down in this, but since we can't allow misinformation to be mainstream in the Yang Gang, I will say that this is not a valid excuse. Assuming their data is correct, which I unfortunately do not assume at this point, since they have proven by ignoring the primary polls that they are not actually a data-driven campaign, but assuming it is correct, that would still not absolve them because initial preference is not the same as final preference, and it is certainly not the same as final preference after their first choice endorses another candidate. I find it very hard to believe that between evolving knowledge over time and Mike endorsing Booker, that a substantial percentage of those who initially favored Amy would not have turned to Booker. Suffice it to say, Mike's campaign and many of his supporters handled this poorly and sullied the name of the Yang Gang in the process. As a huge number of voters will never forgive the potential vote splitting, given the incredibly dire outcome. I don't say that out of spite, but out of necessity, because we must learn from our mistakes and do better in the future. And I'll leave it at that for now. Except to say that Booker coming within an inch of beating McGrath when he had a tiny, tiny fraction of her resources proves that he is a much better candidate. And if McGrath really cared about getting rid of McConnell, she would step down and let Booker run against him. But somehow, I don't think she will. Of course, none of that would have been an issue if Kentucky had used a ranked or scored voting system. Represent Us has put another great short clip explaining why we need to pass democracy reform through states. Highly recommend bookmarking it and sharing it widely. This is probably the most important fight there is, as it's the gatekeeper to all other reform. In case you missed the previous episode, studies show that the degree of public support for a policy has no impact whatsoever on whether or not Congress will pass it, and the only effective means of passing federal legislation, other than being a corporate lobbyist, has been to pass it through the states. So that's the play. Much like with UBI, start small and build up. Trickle up politics. You'll find both the link for the video and the link for the American Anti-Corruption Act below. Please sign the petition for the latter. So, we talked yesterday about people getting radicalized against democracy, and we've talked in the past about the rising threat of fascism and authoritarianism. Yesterday, there was a Radiolab podcast episode floating around, and I started listening to it, and they started talking about the trend in American politics resembling the rise of fascist dictators of the past. They then referenced this World Value Survey that asked some questions about democracy and received some truly horrifying answers. So I looked it up, which was not as easy as you'd think, and it's true. So here are the findings that shocked and horrified me, as they should do you, taken from the Journal of Democracy, an analysis of the democratic questions in the survey. Back in 1995, only 16% of the young believed that democracy was a bad political system. Still kind of high. By 2011, however, that 16% had risen to 24% of millennials, considering democracy to be a bad or very bad way of running the country. 72% of those born before World War II gave a 10 on a 1 to 10 scale to the importance of living in a country that is governed democratically, versus only 30% of millennials now. Support for civil liberties and other rights associated with liberal democracies have also fallen, including free speech and free elections. 41% of those born during the interwar and initial post-war decades state that it is absolutely essential in a democracy that civil rights protect people's liberty. Among millennials, this share falls from 41% to 32%. Worse, only 10% of citizens born in the interwar years and 14% of baby boomers say that it is unimportant in a democracy for people to choose their leaders in free elections. But among liberals, this figure rises from 10% to 26%. 26% of people don't think free elections are important in a democracy. Whew. Interest in politics in general is also declining. Since the 60s, voter turnout has fallen and political party membership has plummeted in virtually all established democracies. In 1990, both a majority of young Americans and older Americans reported being fairly interested or very interested in politics, 53% and 63% respectively. By 2010, the share of young Americans professing an interest in politics had dropped by more than 12%, and the share of older Americans had risen by 4%. As a result, the generational gap had widened from 10% to 26%. Newer generations are also less likely to participate in non-conventional political activities, such as joining new social movements or participating in political protest. Fortunately, we've seen some recent reversal on that, at least. Even more frightening is the rise in explicitly undemocratic forms of governance. In the past three decades, the share of U.S. citizens who think it would be a good or very good thing for the army to rule the country has steadily risen. In 1995, just 1 in 16 respondents agreed with that position. Today, it's 1 in 6. That's almost triple in 21 years. And among young, affluent Americans, it's 1 in 3. While 43% of older Americans do not believe it is legitimate for the military to take over when the government is incompetent, the figure among millennials is much lower, dropping from 43% to 19%. That is only 19% of the American population that opposes takeover of the government by the military. In 1995, 24% of respondents favored a strong leader who doesn't have to bother with Congress or elections. That's a freaking dictator, in case you missed it. 24% is very high. But by 2011, approval for dictator in America had risen from 24% to 32%. Almost a third now approve of a dictatorship. And the proportion of citizens who approve of having experts rather than government make decisions according to what they think is best for the country has grown from 36% to 49%. I mean, Jesus Christ! Pew Research asked the same questions in a slightly more recent 2017 survey and found similar results, with 17% of Americans responding that military rule would be a good form of government, 22% in favor of a dictator, and 40% in favor of rule by unelected experts. They also found that support for military rule was 3 times higher in the uneducated, and support for a dictator was twice as high among Republicans versus Democrats. If that doesn't put the nail in the coffin for whether the Republican Party has turned on everything it once stood for, I don't know what will. So in summary, Americans and many other democracies have been moving toward authoritarianism for decades, and it has come to an extremely disturbing high. Trump is not a fluke. He is an inevitability of the prevailing trend. Democracies have fallen before, and they will fall again. The question is, how do we avoid it? How do we preserve the liberties this country was built on? Well, I would say that first we need to identify what's causing favor in democracy to erode. The organization that performed the survey had this to say, quote, "The desire for free choice and autonomy is a universal human aspiration, but it is not top priority when people grow up feeling that survival is uncertain. As long as physical survival remains uncertain, the desire for physical and economic security tends to take higher priority than democracy. When basic physiological and safety needs are fulfilled, there is a growing emphasis on self-expression values." End quote. In other words, Maslow's hierarchy, and exactly what Yang has been saying. If you want people to care about bigger, more abstract issues, you need to get finances off their back. The author goes on, quote, "In early March 2016, for example, public approval of Congress stood at a mere 13%. Wealthy businessman and television personality Donald Trump, having attracted fervent and surprisingly broad support by railing against the political system and promising policies that would openly violate the rights of ethnic and religious minorities, appears to have won the Republican nomination for the presidency of the United States. Meanwhile, even mainstream political actors are increasingly willing to violate informal rules for the sake of partisan advantage. To name but one example of the resulting gridlock and constitutional dysfunction, the U.S. Senate has refused to even consider President Barack Obama's nominee for a vacant seat on the Supreme Court. Even as democracy has come to be the only form of government widely viewed as legitimate, it has lost the trust of many citizens who no longer believe that democracy can deliver on their most pressing needs and preferences. The optimistic view that this decline in confidence merely represents a temporary downturn is no more than a pleasing assumption, based in part on reluctance to call into question the vaunted stability of affluent democracies. Democracies do not die overnight. In a world where most citizens fervently support democracy, where anti-system parties are marginal or non-existent, and where major political forces respect the rules of the political game, democratic breakdown is extremely unlikely. It is no longer certain, however, that this is the world in which we live. If political scientists are to avoid being blindsided by the demise of established democracies in the coming decades, as they were by the fall of communism a few decades ago, they need to find out whether democratic deconsolidation is happening, to explain the possible causes of this development, to delineate its likely consequences, present and future, and to ponder the potential remedies. End quote. So here's the biggest issue, in my opinion. Trust in the system. We just talked about this yesterday. Is it any surprise that people are becoming disenchanted with democracy when their own democratic system produces lawmakers that have literally no concern for the wishes of their constituents? Let's be clear. We don't even have representative democracy if our politicians are not representing us at all. Basically, we've already lost democracy. I think a lot of people are rebelling against democracy in name only. What they're really rebelling against is our corporatocracy, but they're getting desperate enough to turn to even worse options. There's only one way to solve that. Fix the system. Bring about a real democracy. And we already covered how to do that. Pass the American Anti-Corruption Act in your state. Other things we can do are shut down any attempts at authoritarianism in the meantime, hard. If it wasn't clear to you before why it's so desperately important to get Trump out and get democracy reform in, I hope that these statistics have made the threat abundantly clear. In a recent article, the United Nations Assistant Secretary General and Chief Economist both gave a full-throated endorsement of UBI for all nations as the key to mitigating social unrest, conflict, unmanageable mass migration, and proliferation of extremist groups. They made a lengthy argument that governments need to stop arguing over whether it's affordable and start deciding how to afford it before it is too late. Remember when we talked about how the plague and the economic collapse and the locust swarms in the Middle East and so on must be leading to floods next? Well, feast your freaking eyes on this article from the New York Times that details how new calculations which take into account sea level rise, rainfall, and flooding among smaller creeks not mapped federally estimate that 14.6 million properties are at risk from a 100-year flood, which is far more than the 8.7 million properties shown on federal government flood maps. A 100-year flood, of course, has a 1% chance of striking in any given year. The federal government's flood maps guide where and how to build, whether homeowners should buy flood insurance, and how much risk mortgage lenders take on. If the new estimates are broadly accurate, it would mean that homeowners, builders, banks, insurers, and government officials nationwide have been making decisions with information that understates their true physical and financial risks. Numerous cities nationwide, as diverse as Fort Lauderdale, Buffalo, and Chattanooga, show the startling gaps in the risks. In Chicago alone, 75,000 properties have a previously undisclosed flood risk. And of course, climate change is only going to continue increasing this risk over time. But that's not all. Call now and you'll get a second flu pandemic from China for free. No, seriously. Epidemiologists are warning of a new swine flu strain in China, and the WHO just warned yesterday that governments are not coordinating with one another or handling the pandemic appropriately, so the worst is still yet to come with COVID. Let the end times roll. There has to be some provision limiting China to a maximum of one pandemic per year, right? Surely. Scott is asking that we help get the book Tyranny of Kindness on the Kindle by going to the Amazon page and clicking the link that says, I would like to read this on the Kindle. It's toward the bottom right of the page in a little pop-up box, only takes 5 seconds to do, and it's for a good cause. Scott also shared some awesome data from the Ontario UBI trial, showing that UBI increased 38% of recipients' wages and 31% of recipients' working conditions. Bookmark that one for sure. In the U.S., economic activity, which has been slowly improving for the last couple months, appears to have leveled off. How close to pre-COVID levels did we get before stalling out? About 60%. And let us not forget, this is just before the bonus unemployment insurance and protections on evictions go away. And COVID cases are still rising to historic levels. And Congress is still debating whether further stimulus is needed. Mind blown. Tim Ryan has a petition for his and Ro Khanna's $2,000 per month basic income bill for the extent of the crisis. Please follow the link below and add your name because we need it. Finally, Scott has made a Twitter group of all the members of Mayors for a Guaranteed Income, and we already have a new name to add. Mike Dugan, Mayor of Detroit, has joined the hallowed list of basic income champions. Be sure to thank him and please visit the list and give every member a follow and a thank you for their support. Then write your own mayor and urge them to join the club. And that'll do it for today's Yang Daily. Pick a red state Democratic Senate challenger with a chance and get to work supporting them. Add your name to the Anti-Corruption Act and spread the word like wildfire. Bookmark and share the Democratic survey stats and the Ontario UBI benefits data. Point Congress to the economic activity data, help get Tyranny of Kindness on the Kindle, sign Tim Ryan's BI petition, follow and thank the mayors for UBI, help advocate for clear, fundamental policy goals for the protests. If you're going out to protest, wear protection, especially on your eyes, head, and throat. If you get arrested while protesting, remember not to say anything without a lawyer. Whatever you choose to do, be wise, be safe, and act with measured purpose toward real solutions. And don't forget to Yang Daily.